yanked it in from his knees.
So your final score is Marshall County 77, Lyon County 46.
It's the place coming to home. The Racers are going to win. Racers win on that.
Flush now throws it down the field. And complete touchdown, Mayfield.
It's a jaw-jam.
Neil, are you sick and tired of seeing me yet?
Well, it didn't start this week, Ed.
Oh, it's you've always been sick and tired.
I've always been that way.
This is the third podcast in the last 11 days. This is a record.
I know. But this is a special occasion. I was all set to say, Ed, absolutely not. It's Friday night. I got better stuff to do. Murray, we know it's a happening town. There's so many places to be in town.
Oh, absolutely.
And then
population 11,000.
You told me why. Like, all right, I'll do that one.
Well, Jonathan Maddox, former Murray State men's basketball coach and new Morehead State men's basketball coach, is, let us know, are you out of town on Monday? Is that the final day?
I'm gone Monday morning. So I'll spend these next few days packing some stuff up, and I'll be in Morehead Monday afternoon.
Well, thank you for taking this. We're going to be here 3.5 hours. No, I'm just kidding. We're not.
Trust me, we're not.
But thank you for taking this sliver of time before you head out of here. We love to do exit interviews with assistant coaches and fare-thee-wells, and just definitely wanted to get your thoughts on a lot of different things. Neil,
and this will depend on how the interview goes, just so I know. If I'm ever in Morehead and need tickets to a Morehead game, can I get a call?
Absolutely.
All right.
No question.
It's going to go great tonight.
No question.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have a great podcast.
All right. Good deal.
I love Morehead. I love that part. I love that part of the state. I have spent a lot of time in Eastern Kentucky with my travels, former beat reporter, and as just someone who, you know, travels around the state frequently for photography and other reasons. I love Morehead. What drew you to this opportunity? You know, I mean, I know coaching changes happen, but what drew you to want to get back involved with Morehead?
Yeah, and I've got a great love and respect for Morehead. You know, I had a really good 9-year run there. My wife, my kids, they loved it there. We got really good relationships there on campus, not only in the athletic department. My wife worked on campus. Know a lot of people in the community, and it's a great place with good people. Number one, so that was a big drawing point for me.
At what point did you realize, man, I love what's going on at Murray State, but Preston Spradlin is going to get an opportunity and you might get the phone call? Like, at what point did that kind of come to fruition for you?
Yeah, probably not until the Friday where he actually took the James Madison job. There were a lot of rumors swirling with his name involved with different jobs. Mm-hmm. We really didn't talk much throughout that whole process until he was pretty dead set on taking James Madison. We talked that night. He told me the AD, Kelly Wells at Morehead, was going to give me a call, and that's how things really got started.
Okay. And I heard the Kelly Wells speech about Preston. That has to make you want to go to a school when you have an athletic director. It gives you that kind of support.
Yeah, and Coach Wells, I still call him Coach because that's what he, you know, he's just coaching coaches now.
That's right.
But he's... I spent the day around him when I was on campus there last Thursday. Servant leader, you know, he is there to serve those coaches at Morehead State University, and that's what he does. And there wasn't a coach, head coach, assistant coach, support staff member in that athletic department that had one bad thing to say. And I'm really looking forward to working under him.
It's a moot point because obviously you're the head coach, but I was reading some tea leaves, betting lines and whatever else, there was a few whispers that maybe he would have been an athletic director/coach. I can't even imagine trying to manage those two things at the same time. And obviously it's a moot point, but I saw that and I kept scratching my head. Like, I knew his experience. I'm not dismissing that.
Yeah.
But you still call him coach.
Yeah.
Is he somebody you think you're going to be able to rely on just moving forward in the process?
Absolutely. That was another big drawing point for me. Me being a younger head coach, me being a first-time head coach, you know, I'm not afraid to rely on people who have sat in that seat before. So he's involved. He's at practices. He travels with the teams. Obviously, he's at games. So I'm looking forward to picking his brain, you know, whenever I get in a pinch, say, hey, Coach Wells, what do you think about this?
What year did you decide, I want to be a head coach when that opportunity comes? Is this something that you've always wanted to do, or was there a time when this was the year that happened?
Yeah, I think early in my career, I graduated college in 2011. My college coach, T.J. Rosen, was very influential in me becoming a college coach. He even you know, told me, actually told my parents that on senior night while our season, we still had a lot of season left. And he really influenced me to get into coaching. And then once I got in and really loved it and enjoyed not only coaching the part, but the mentoring part, the developing of young men, I said, you know, I think this is something I want to do, and I want to be a Division I head coach one day.
And that time is here.
It's here.
I get that. That's right. I mean, it's crazy to think about that. And before we look back, I really kind of want to look forward. What are the next steps in the process? I mean, we saw, and just as a reference, we saw Calipari.
Yep.
You know, at Arkansas, say, I talked to my team. There is no team.
Yep.
Right. And I thought that was actually really funny, and I know that that's very timely right now. But in this world that swirls around us of NIL and transferring and new coaches and coaching changes, where do you stand in that situation, and what do your next few weeks look like at Morehead State?
Yeah, my biggest focus, this being really my a week into the job, three main focuses, retention, to Cal's point. There are some young men in that locker room in Morehead, Kentucky that – actively recruiting, trying to keep out of the portal. I think you know, they have great foundational pieces there. Guys who were on a 26-win team, guys who won a conference championship, guys who can develop into better players. So retention has been number one. Recruiting has been number two. Obviously, the transfer portal is open and active. So now we got to fit our needs through the portal. And then number three is hiring a staff, which I'm still working on. So
well, you get two guys right here, Neil.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no.
If
I couldn't drop
when you hire a staff. What's the first guy that you hire? Who is there? I need a guy that can do this, this, and this. Is there that guy, or you just think about an entire staff at once?
I think, and I was telling this to somebody earlier today, Neil, you want to think about your staff how you think about your team. I was literally telling somebody this earlier. We can't play a team and put five post players on the court, right?
That's right.
We'd probably struggle in some areas. Or we can't put five guards on the court. We'd probably struggle. So you build your staff the same way. You want guys who are obviously good recruiters. You want guys who are good X's and O's. You want guys who are good in player development. You know, with the support staff guys, you need some guys who are good administratively. So you want to put together the best staffs I've been on have been balanced. They've been well-rounded, and that's what I'm looking to do with my staff.
When you talk about the portal, and again, I know that this is now an active situation for you. It was an active situation for you as an assistant coach at Murray State. But when you're navigating these, everybody has talked about post-COVID, these 5 years, these last 5 years of just how chaotic, how beautiful, but how chaotic and how terrible NIL and transfers have become.
Yep.
And how they call it the epidemic. I think today, Neil, more than 1,400.
It's 16 today.
16. Okay.
It hit 16 yesterday.
It's like an epidemic counter. There's a belief that there will be up to 2,000 players in the portal. How do you navigate that, and where do you see yourself maybe parsing through all of that information over the next few weeks?
Yeah, I think, first of all, you got to have a positive stance on the portal. I remember telling somebody years ago when we lost a couple players at Morehead after our championship team, said, yeah, the portal works both ways. It giveth, and if it taketh away.
Yeah, yeah.
So to me, like, a lot of people are down on the portal. The portal is neutral. Like, I remember telling one of my good friends this, you can't say you love the or you hate the portal when you lose player X, Y, or Z, but because you're going to get a good player out of the portal too. So I think it all balances itself out. You navigate it through your connections. You know, that's the young men I'm currently recruiting are either young men that I've coached before or have some connection to their AAU coach or their college coach. So I think that's how you got to navigate it. You certainly can't go through all 2,000 kids. Start with the kids you know. Start with the positional needs that fit your system and go from there.
And that's why you have to recruit the team that you have and know who you have before you go to the portal and really know what you need, right?
Right, right. And sometimes the most important guys, a lot of times, are the guys that are still on your current roster. I really learned a lot from our situation at Murray, and one of the things I told the hiring committee, and it was no fault of ours, Coach McMahon had great success. He moves on to LSU. Some players follow him to LSU. Some other players get in the portal. And we were left with one returner, DJ Burns. Mm-hmm. You know, I said, you know, my biggest focus those first really 3 days was retention, retention, retention. Called everybody on that team. Called every parent on that team. Hey, I still want your son. I want him to play for us. I want him to play for me. And let's build it from the inside out.
Sure. And you had some guys decide to stay that route and make that decision to renew that commitment and stay at Murray State. Before we reflect on Murray State, just another question about NIL, because I know I don't want to be gauche about this, but not everybody's checkbook is the same. Absolutely. However, how do you level that playing field? I mean, I know it's hard to say, well, we'll just pony up $5 million like Arkansas. That's probably not realistic.
Yep.
But how do you look at it? Doesn't even have to be a Morehead State. Let's just say mid-major. How do you look at mid-major basketball and say, where do we get our NIL dollars and how do we sustain those NIL dollars moving down the years?
Yeah, how you sustain it, I really don't know. You know, you get it to me. This is what I've told some people in this community is you get it through just education. You know, here's where some other schools in our league are at. Here's what certain players are worth. You know, so I'm just educating you on the whole deal because I'm in the weeds. I'm talking to assistant coaches on other staffs. I'm talking to recruits. I'm talking to agents. So I'm getting the whole picture and piecing it together. And you just got to educate people first. Obviously, you got to have good relationships if you want to get in people's pocketbooks. You know, so those are some of the ways.
Sure. And you just have to be honest about it. I mean, you mentioned a word, and Neil, I know you and I've talked a little bit about this, and I'd love, you know, anybody's thoughts on this, but, you know, the new word there is agents. That's the new word. That's the new, and who is an agent versus who is an agent, and I'm using air quotes there. Obviously, agents can be family members. Agents can also be official agents, people who are negotiating the value of the transfer. So I know that a lot of this is muddy. I'm not going to deny that, but as a coach who now has to like work through those weeds, how do you get through agency versus this is what our university can offer and afford, and I still want you to be a part of the program? How do you sort through that?
It's a balance. So you still recruit the young man. You still recruit the prospective student athlete like you normally would. This is what we have to offer. This is where you fit in. This is our style of play. A lot of times the agents come in on the back end. The agents, at least the ones I've talked to, they still want the student athlete to find the best basketball situation for them.
Mm-hmm.
But their job on the back end is to negotiate the best deal for that young man.
Sure.
So there is a balance. You know, it's a balancing act. Some agents you may talk to off rip and, hey, they may be out of your price range and you just got to move on. But for the most part, the agents do want to see their clients, these young men, be successful. So they do got to find the best basketball fit for them. And then now the negotiations happen, you know, once it narrows down.
And I don't know if Johnny has ever heard this, but I've told many people this. If you want to cinch a recruit at Morehead State, bring them peak colors in the fall and take them over to a football game. It's one of the most beautiful places in the state.
I can agree with that.
And I said, if they get somebody here today, they're going to get them. If they bring them back in December when all those leaves are gone, I don't know.
Right.
But I'm just telling you.
When it's a frozen tundra.
I'm telling you, that place is absolutely gorgeous
in the
fall.
The campus is gorgeous.
It's a wonderful, wonderful community and a real gem in as far as our regional universities go.
No doubt. No doubt. And a lot of times once we got a kid on campus, we had pretty good success getting them.
Yeah.
You know, most kids, most families are – you know, maybe a little unknowledgeable about Murray off the jump, but once you get them here, you show them around, they see campus, they see the community, they meet people out and about, whether that's at a restaurant or wherever, they're like, okay, I like Murray.
And you look, and like, even with Morehead, you got the hour drive from Lexington or so, but that's that pretty close to an airport. So you can say, hey, you can fly in here. You can do that.
Absolutely.
A lot of interstates go in and out of there.
Yep.
So it's pretty easy to get to Morehead State, even though it is far eastern Kentucky, or I guess we have to say east Kentucky.
Sure.
I've learned that from being in Morehead. It's east.
It's east. Not
eastern is the school.
Right.
That's what I was told.
Yeah.
Okay. So don't want to slip that one up.
That's funny.
But there are advantages that you do have there.
Yeah. being in close vicinity to Lexington was a huge thing. Like you said, the airport. But there's a lot you can do in Lexington.
That's right.
The mall, the restaurants. I was telling somebody the other day, I could get to, from where I used to live in Moorhead to the Lexington Mall in just under an hour. So, you know, those are things.
They race a few horses there, I think.
Yep. Yeah, they do. Absolutely.
Have they actually named a small mountain Mount Maddox yet? Like no. coming into Moorhead? No. I wondered if that was actually like they have a place waiting for you.
Probably Elite 8 would get that done, I would say.
Maybe. We'll see.
If that happens, we'll be the first ones to stand for it.
The Ohio Valley Conference is changed from when Murray State was in it, but there were all sorts of people whenever, you know, Murray, Eastern, Belmont, all those left. Well, OVC is going to be nothing. I think they've done a wonderful job recruiting schools that fit their footprint. Little Rock, I think, was a good get. And they're surviving just fine.
Yeah
they really are.
Yeah, it's a competitive league.
It is.
You know, I kept with it as much as we could here, especially, you know, tried to watch some games on Thursdays when we were off. Couldn't watch as many on Saturdays. But, yeah, obviously Moorhead's had a great run these last 4 years. Little Rock had a really good team this year. UT Martin had a really good team. Mm-hmm. And Western Illinois, you know.
Yeah.
You know, they've done well. So it's a competitive league, and certainly looking forward to get over there and get going.
I do want to take us back just a little bit as we reflect on your time at Murray State, and I kind of want to start with a softball question. What's your favorite memory over the last 2 years with Murray State men's basketball?
Probably Jacoby Wood, Valpo, game winner.
Yeah, that was nice.
Let's go.
It's a good one.
Up and down season, you know, we needed that game. We needed that win, and it was a game where, you know, we were up. Couldn't really close it out, you know. Evansville. I'm sorry, not Evansville. They hung around, and Jacoby was able to get it at the buzzer.
Well, no, I mean, you mentioned the Valpo game too. I mean, and I know that this season was tough, but there were a lot of games that were that nip and tuck, have a lead, they get it back type of situation. But you're right about the Evansville game.
Yep.
Yeah, and I know Valpo was right nearby, but that Evansville game did feel like a need it. A breaker type of game
for sure, for sure.
Well, I was just—I mean, I wanted to the first season, and this is kind of where I wanted to get your insight. When you're taking a look at the jump from the, and again, I'm not ever going to be the person that's going to slander what the Ohio Valley Conference has to offer. I'm just never going to do it. Great basketball can come in many shapes and sizes, but when Murray State jumped from the Ohio Valley to the Missouri Valley. And you got to be a part of that inaugural staff.
Yep.
The Missouri Valley over the last 2 years, on average, has been a top 10, you know, RPI type of conference, and the OVC is not. That's just the mathematics of it. How do you explain to fans or to even the classic layman how much more difficult the type of basketball is and the expectations that come with dominating an Ohio Valley conference versus trying to just succeed and get a single bye in the Missouri Valley? How do you balance those two, and how do you tell a fan this is a different type of basketball?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the style of play, number one, is different. The bigs in the league, I mean, you're talking about huge. Darnell Brody at Drake.
Yeah.
Robbie Avila at Indiana State.
Mm-hmm.
This year, Malik Dia at Belmont. You know, huge bigs, physicality inside. Not much is really called in the paint.
That's true.
So that's an adjustment to where probably halfway through our first season, why would y'all look at the officials? I said that's not a foul in the Missouri Valley.
Right.
So let's stop looking for it. We've got to get more physical. We got to get tougher. We got to play through it. So that's number one. Style of play is a little bit different. A lot of Midwest half court basketball as opposed to some up and down play. So the style of play, number one, is an adjustment. The coaches, Darren DeVries, he's at West Virginia now. You know, Josh Schertz, he's at St. Louis. Brian Wardle is a really good coach.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of good coaches have come through. So it's hard to put in words. The depth of talent, one through, I mean, it's a 12-team league, one through 10, 1 through 9. I mean, there's just so many good teams, good coaches, and good players. You know, you're really just trying to go 1-0 every night. You know, forget trying to win 20 or 25. Let's just go 1-0 tonight. And then maybe the thing that is most underrated is the fan bases. You go up to Peoria, Illinois to play Bradley, it's going to be just about sold out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go up play Northern Iowa, you know, it's loud. You know,
Ben Jacobs has got – he's rallying guys there.
Absolutely. You know. So the fan bases, you know, make the road games that much tougher.
Well, and I you make a great point. And, again, I'm not going to poo-poo on any team, but if you just mathematically look at a home game at UT Martin where Murray State brings the bulk of their fan base, it's not quite the same in the Missouri Valley.
Right.
Yeah. 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 There's more heat on the road than there actually ever has been in Murray State men's basketball history.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that was an adjustment for us. I think we sort of got settled in. We were a better road team this past year. But that was certainly an adjustment for us in year one.
And it seemed like, with me watching the games, I wasn't as close as I was the year before, but we're like that one good player away from winning those 3-, 4-, 5-point games. And that turns the season around into an 18, 19, 20 win season. But just missing the one player in the Missouri Valley is very difficult to compensate when you don't have it.
Sure, yeah. Whether that's one player, whether that's one play here and there, a loose right. ball here and there, a rebound here and there, a free throw, you know, a turnover, you know, little things. All these games, it's like our first two games in Valley history were home, Illinois State, if y'all remember that
yeah.
one.
Yeah, OT win.
And then at Valpo.
OT win.
Also OT win.
That's right.
But both games at the end of the regulation were 62-62. I mean, just nip and tuck the whole way. Really good coaches. So if you go on a 6-0 run in this league, coach is going to take a timeout, reset his team, and they're going to come back ready to go. So it was a fun league to coach in for the last 2 years.
I don't want to – I know it's the most recent memory, and I know it's a tough memory because I'm sure it's something that you and the staff have reflected on. But looking back on this year, there are so many different numbers you can throw out. You know, the fact that defensively there were maybe some concerns, but then defense would be strong for a couple months. Like, mm-hmm. I what do you think it was maybe the biggest catalyst for this season? What made this season the most difficult, you know, in trying to navigate to get to March Madness and Arch Madness and try to get just like over that hump of, hey, we've got a lead, let's keep it. And what do you think were the biggest reasons for some of that?
Probably momentum, right? And momentum can go both ways, too.
Oh, yeah.
Got good momentum, you got bad momentum. In Fort Myers, playing against a really good UNC Wilmington team who beat Kentucky, I thought we played a really good game. Started slow, and then probably after the first 6 or 7 minutes, we settled in and played great up until the minute mark where we lead by 5. Minute to go on the clock at the free throw line shooting a 1-1. And us not being able to close that game from a mental standpoint, I do think that hurt us and affected us the rest of the year because you look at the close losses or the leads that we lost, you know, there certainly was a pattern.
And that's a kind of a team. If you had a team chock full of veterans that maybe didn't bring it on, but you had 6 or 7 seniors, they can probably shake that off and recover from
right.
it. But not as easy in this one, was it?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it just, for whatever reason, and I don't like to make excuses. You know, we know moving forward, got to be better. Got to be better in close games. Got to be better with leads. For this team this year, it was just tough. We could never figure it out. We could never get over the hump.
Yeah. One of the other things that I kind of wanted to ask about, too, from a very positive perspective, had some individuals this year that had great seasons,
yep.
you know, all things considered.
Yep.
Quincy Anderson.
Yep.
What can you tell us? We've talked to him a lot just through press conferences. He's certainly been an ambassador for the program, but as someone who is behind the scenes with him every single day, what can you tell us about Quincy Anderson, and what did you observe just in his development over the last 24 months?
Yeah, great kid, tough kid that wants to do well. That wants to please you. He was in the gym today working on his craft, you know, and a lot of his stuff is attributed to his work ethic, whether that's offensively or defensively. And, You know, when he started to come along, his confidence got better. We went to Quincy Moore. We played through him offensively. But I was probably more impressed with his defensive effort, his toughness on the glass, you know, having games of 6, 7, 8 rebounds, being able to guard the other team's best perimeter player and guard them well, using his physicality. You know, he's going to have a great future in whatever he does.
And one of the best I've seen recently in finishing through contact.
Yep.
He'd get hammered, goes in, and can make the free throw, too.
Yeah, yeah. Got to be able – this league, you got to be able to drive. If you're going to drive in there, you're going to get contact. And just because there's contact doesn't mean there's a foul.
That's true. That's right.
I would tell them all the time, go put your shoulder on a guy's chest and go finish the layup, you know. So he was really good at that.
Jacoby also, I thought, had a really excellent year for you.
Sure. Yeah, we were really pleased with Jacoby. He averaged about 12, 5, and 5 on the year. Led us in minutes. You know, obviously hit the big game winner for us. Had some really good games.
Played 40 minutes, not often.
Played 40 minutes a lot.
Yeah, yeah, a lot.
Played 40 minutes a lot. So he's been one of the league leaders in minutes for the last 2 years. And certainly Steve and the rest of the staff are excited to have him back for one more year, and that'll be his best year in college.
I know you can't specifically discuss for all obvious reasons, but I just kind of wanted to loosely base some conversation moving forward about where does Murray State go, you know, moving forward. You know, there's some loose change from a scholarship perspective.
Yep.
You know, there's been some transfers. I know you can't speak to any names, but how do you see this staff moving forward in trying to fill some of those gaps? I mean, you've already got some signees.
Sure.
But loose change, how do you handle that? And how do you handle, let's talk about the other part of loose change, NIL, which continues to be a big, big push, not only for Morehead State, but for Murray State.
Yep.
How do you navigate that, and maybe where does this staff go moving forward?
Yeah, and Murray State basketball is in good hands. There's not an individual in the country that loves Murray State more than Steve Prohm. They're in good hands. He's got a plan. The staff has a plan. They're on some really good transfers. But, you know, kind of going back to retention, you got Jacoby Wood at the point, and you got a guy who we think is probably the best big in the Missouri Valley now in Nick Ellingson.
Yeah.
Who had a really good junior year.
Yeah, he really did.
He's back. Glad you brought that up. He's back. Not only is he back, I'm watching him in workouts today. He's better today than he was a month ago. So you got your two bookends. Those are really important. Those guys have been in the program. They know the expectations. They've been through the league. One of them for 2 years, one of them for 1 year now. So you got really good experience there, especially considering all the attrition in the Missouri Valley.
I'm glad you brought that up. All 15 guys now, except for Duke Dean, are out. The top 15 players are gone.
Right. So Duke Dean's back. Everybody else is gone. And I feel really good about Murray State's roster, starting with those two. So now you build around them, which you probably need some guys on the wing who can score, some guys on the wing who can shoot, who can make threes. They're addressing that in the recruiting front. Probably need another big guy, you know what I mean, to add some depth to the front court. They're addressing that on the recruiting front. So I feel good about those things. You know, as Coach Prohm moves forward with his staff at Murray State.
And sure. Justin Morgan, one of those players, he does lots of the little things.
Yep.
But let's be honest, he hasn't been the shooter that we thought we were getting whenever he was recruited. I still think that's ahead of him, and I still think that's something he could possibly bring to this Racer team.
Justin Morgan's value as a player is much more than the stats would indicate. And guess what? He knows he hadn't shot it well.
Right,
you
right.
Know?
Yeah.
He shot it decent
in
conference
play. When he does, oh my gosh.
No question.
He's one of the guys then.
Maybe the toughest kid that I've coached in 13 years. Does everything we ask him to do, how you ask him to do it. Could guard some fives in our league. Obviously guard some fours. Did a good job walling up in the paint. Good job on the glass. Tremendous hustle. He was maybe the most disappointed after our Missouri State loss in conference tournament, and he looked me dead in the eye and said, "Coach, I'm ready to go to work for next year."
Wow. I like that.
So
I'm good with that.
I've got no issues with him, right? He's going to be an integral part of the program, whether he averages 10 points next year or he averages 3 points next year, right? That's a dude you want in the foxhole with you.
Some of the things that Neil and I talked about, too, and this is just – This is just overarching, just about college basketball. Do you, as a head coach now and as a former assistant coach, have to come across your mind with that expectation of, well, I'm going to lose 25% of my roster no matter how hard I try because of how the portal works? Like, is that something that you just – do you have to mentally expect that now? Is that just a common denominator for college basketball with the way the portal works? Or is there a way to – I mean, I know Dan Hurley and UConn is a hard example as back-to-back national champions, but several 3- and 4-year guys on his roster. Can you get that? Is that a possibility in this new basketball world?
Yeah, you certainly want to work on retention as much as possible, whether that's through development, through relationships, whatever the case may be. But that portal I was joking with Steve the other day, and it was really a half joke. He's asking, you know, who's in the portal. And if you look at the Missouri Valley, and this is what, like, Coach, the better question is, who's not in the portal?
That's right.
Yeah. You know, yeah. So that You're portal, right. It's a beast. And kids don't get penalized. You know, they don't have to sit out anymore. There are bigger and better financial opportunities for them. So some of those things I do get.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
And as far as the pressure now, and we saw this in the last few years, not just here but everywhere, to play freshmen. If you recruit freshmen and they don't play, they're probably gone.
Yep.
And in the past, that probably didn't happen much because, well, I got to sit out of here if I transfer. Now they don't have to.
Yeah, that's another balance. So if they don't play, they're gone. If they do play and play well, if you have a freshman of the year type player or an all-freshman type
that's
player.
Right.
They're gone.
That's right.
Right?
I'm so glad you brought that up because it's like
you don't want them to score too much.
I'm gonna say my one cuss word per you're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. I'll say it for you. That's so tough. Do you guys feel like you had to navigate that with a guy like Rice?
Absolutely.
Just the way that he was able to kind of – I'm not saying he was an all-league caliber player, but he showed moments of –
You could see his progress.
Cohesion and progress.
Yeah. Yep.
Is that a concern moving forward? Just not for him, just for college basketball in general, about how freshmen can be so delicately handled like fine china.
Yeah,
like,
we talked about that all the time. And I think Laurent Rice is a guy who's going to have a big year at Murray State next year. But, yeah, we talked about late in the season, like, if we don't play this young man, he's probably in the portal. So let's get him some experience, and not like let's get him some experience. He earned it, you know.
Sure.
Laurent got better in practice. He got more mature. He earned those opportunities.
Yeah.
So now we threw him out there. I thought he was pretty successful for the most part, and he's a guy that's going to have a big year next year because he's a talented player.
And I would always tell this one, and I know you guys hear it, well, how come they're not playing this guy? How come they're not playing that guy?
Thank you.
Here's what I said, like, come to practice.
Yeah.
Just come to practice, and then you won't answer that. Have to ask that question.
And
that's
why. This is for fans everywhere across the country. I've yet to meet a coach who likes to lose.
That's right. I'm not going to play him.
Primarily, we're evaluated on wins and losses.
That's right.
If a guy is not playing,
that's
the
funny.
Coach has a reason for him not playing, and 90% of it has to do with practice. Like, we watch these guys, believe it or not, like, we watch them every day in practice. Then we'll go back and watch the film of practice. Then, obviously, we watch the game film.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some, believe it or not, we do put a little bit of thought into who plays and who doesn't.
I absolutely love the deadpan delivery of that. And it was
valid.
But you meant it with every drop. I just felt that.
And here's the other thing. And
this was good.
This is for everybody, coaches, specifically players. In a basketball game, there's only 200 minutes, right? So I'm just going to use Jacoby and Laurent as an example. And just so there's only 40 minutes at the point guard spot. So if Jacoby and Laurent Rice, let's say they only play point guard, we can't play Jacoby 35 minutes and Laurent 20 minutes. We're at 55 minutes. There's only 40 minutes at that spot. Only 40 minutes at the two, the three, there's only 200 minutes available. So those things we have constant conversations about in our staff meeting. Okay, well, if you want to play a guy more, guess what you got to do? You also got to play a guy less.
Yeah,
you
that's
know.
Right.
So
that's a great point.
Those are conversations we have constantly.
It's basketball math. I mean, it's not transitive. It's not one of those situations where you have to look at. You can't make up 200 minutes. I mean, you can't. That's such a great point. Yeah. I never thought about it. The sliders aren't just in 2K. The sliders exist also in real life. About how your rotations are supposed to fit.
That's it.
That's absolutely fascinating stuff.
Morehead State question.
Yep.
Who handles the scheduling?
Great question. I'm trying to hire somebody. Is that right? Right now,
you heard it here first. Right, he's hiring.
Right now, it's me.
Is that right?
Hopefully, in a couple of weeks, it'll be whoever
can
I
hand
hire.
That off to somebody.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. And the Murray State, Morehead State game, what date is that?
Yeah, we'll have to get with Coach Prohm on that.
I hear that. That means no. You know when your parents say, well, we'll see. That's a we'll see.
Yeah, for the record, Neil is an
– And it's nothing. Coaches, they don't like playing their friends. They really don't.
No.
And this isn't anything new. This is nationwide.
Yep.
It's an ancient
You'll
tradition.
Be happy to meet in the Sweet 16 sometime.
Sure. I hope that happens.
That would be great. Everybody will be happy.
I hope that happens.
Yeah, we sure do.
You're right, though. That is how that has to happen. You have to ask that question, one, because you're an astute journalist.
That's
But two, you also have to ask that question because I think every fan always asks that question.
They want to know, how are we playing?
Why aren't we playing Mick Cronin? Why aren't we playing, where's Dusty May?
And doesn't happen.
Amir, why aren't we playing? Where's Billy Kennedy? Don't get me wrong, as a journalist myself, it'd be amazing to write that headline, former and current racers battling it out, but the logic just doesn't fit unless it's a tournament scenario.
Yeah. It's, a lot of things go into it, but, number one, coaches don't like playing their friends, so they're certainly not going to like playing guys they either worked with or worked for.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just, it probably is a little bit too uncomfortable for everybody involved.
Sure.
Absolutely. But if you coach long enough, you have – and that is the one good thing. You have relationships nationwide.
Yep.
If you coach 10 years, you can probably sleep in almost every state at somebody's house if you had to, couldn't
yep.
you?
Yep, yep.
Yeah, it's just the way it is.
That's the great thing about coaching is the travel, different cities, different states. You meet different people. You're playing in front of different fan bases, so it's – I mean, there's a lot of really cool things that come with it.
Now, you have a family, so is your wife ready for, come on, coach! He can't, it's the head coach's wife thing. Now she's the head coach's wife.
She is.
She's ready for it.
Yeah.
All right.
I think she is.
Well, that's good.
The conversations her and I have, and again, I'm different. I like to study things and this and that officiating, right?
Yeah.
I tell her all the time, I've never lost a game because of officiating. She vehemently disagrees, but I never have.
Right.
And I've really gotten to know officials over the years and really pick their brains, talk to them, like probably see me talking to them at every timeout. Uh-huh. One thing, officials are graded. And studies have shown 90% of the time officials blow the whistle, they're right.
Mm-hmm.
So are they going to miss calls? Absolutely. But that's part of the game. That's just as much part of the game as a player missing a shot or us calling a bad play as a coach. All those things come with it. Officials are going to miss calls, but 90% of the time they're going to be right.
So, I saw one baseball game this year where the umpire kind of put his arm on the manager's shoulder who's out arguing, and you could read his lips. I missed that one.
Yep.
And he went,
it happens.
Okay. And he went back to the dugout. I was like, hey, guy was upfront about it.
I blew it.
He just missed the call.
And a lot of it is a numbers game. Whether you talk about football officials or baseball umpires or basketball, you got three guys officiating 10. How are they going to get everything right?
Yeah.
You got three guys officiating 10 guys in a quick pace game with a ball involved that they got to,
bounces.
Yeah. Like they're going to miss a call or two here or there. That's all right.
Coach, my last question for you, and we always appreciate your time, and Neil, I'm sure, is going to have a couple more questions for you as well, but the main thing on my mind, you have kind of taken this circuitous path, over the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
What drew you from Morehead State to be on Steve's staff to begin with, now that you're headed back to Morehead State, trying to, complete the circle, so to speak?
Yeah, several things. I've got some friends who are also close with Steve. James Kane is actually the first person to reach out to me. So I think it was a Friday that Steve got named head coach. James Kane reached out to me that afternoon, said, hey, would you be interested? I think he's looking for a staff. I think, he told me he had already recommended me to Steve. I said, yeah, I definitely would. Knowing Coach's history, both here and at Iowa State, Two, knowing Murray State was moving to the Missouri Valley, which was an exciting challenge.
Right.
And then later that night, I had a text from Amir Abdur-Rahim asking the same thing. So those two guys really, really vouched for me to Coach Prohm. So, and I had good conversations with Coach Prohm, really liked his vision. And like the challenge of going to the Missouri Valley, going to a new league, going to a different league. So those are things that drew me. And then obviously the history tradition at Murray State, the coaches that have come through here, the players that have come through here, the teams that have come through here, all those things were really exciting.
I didn't know a word of that. That was incredible. I didn't realize. You think about the coaching tree that does exist at Murray State and the network. Not even just Murray in general, but the other tangential parts that touch the Ohio Valley Conference and now the Missouri Valley. And it was just interesting. Just I was just curious, you know, what brought that full circle approach? And, you know, because I'm sure it was difficult. You guys were, I'll just say my other curse word for the episode, you guys were kicking ass at Morehead State, you know, under Spradlin. So you kind of took a leap of faith, so to speak.
I did.
Knowing that there was this. It's hard for me to stress. It is extremely difficult to go from the Ohio Valley to the Missouri Valley.
Yep.
And Belmont's even learning that now. I understand they may have a few more wins, but they don't have any conference championships either. Yeah. That's how much more difficult the Missouri Valley is. And so you took kind of a chance and a leap of faith to enjoy this journey and make this
I
trip.
Have also one my final question.
Yeah, no,
yours,
no,
I
just
mine.
It's a lot.
Sometimes you get that first head coaching job and you're called in to clean up a mess.
Yep.
That's not the situation here. You don't have to go build a program, pick the ashes up and try to get to something good. You're inheriting a really solid program and a firm foundation there.
Yeah, absolutely. And credit there goes to Preston Spradlin. Did an unbelievable job. Did an unbelievable job coaching. Did an unbelievable job building that culture, laying that foundation, like you said, where – like I said, you know, the young men that I'm trying to retain, I know they're great character kids. I know they're really good basketball players, but I also know they know how to work and they know how to win. So, yeah, it's a really good situation all the way around administratively. You know, Dr. J. Morgan, our president.
Former racer, Dr. J.
Former
Morgan.
Racer, yeah. Coach Kelly Wells, our athletic director. You know, from administratively, from a resource standpoint, and then from a history and tradition standpoint, especially recently, I'm stepping into a really good situation.
And I get to root for him 30 times a year plus.
Let's go. And let's go.
If he plays us down the road, no, but doesn't look like that's going to happen. So
that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
I'll be a fan.
Neil, you had to ask just for your own fandom.
And I usually do all of our former coaches, but not all. Dusty May. Sorry, bud.
Why do you not?
He's at Michigan.
Oh, that's right.
Ohio State guys don't root for Michigan.
Neil's
guys,
an Ohio State guy.
So sorry.
Sorry, Dusty.
If you ever go there, just so you know.
Man. Dusty, right. If you're listening, you've lost a fan. Yeah.
But I still love Dusty. I do.
What's I'll just slightly digress here.
Oh, no.
No doubt. Dave Winder always tells a really good story. Didn't Dusty May get sick on a flight once?
Yeah.
I've heard that story.
Yeah,
I've heard that story.
Poor guy. He was curled up under the airplane seats because our plane kind of got stolen for some other reason. I don't remember.
Right.
And we didn't have one, so the players were put on three different flights, and the players went ahead to Ryder to play in the Bracket Buster.
Right.
And, of course, we're the broadcasters. We knew who was going to be on the third plane. That'd be us. And Dusty was the lower-level assistant, so that was him, too. But anyway, we'll tell that story in its entirety. I know Jonathan, man, he's got a pack. He's got to get the Morehead.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
He's probably got players he needs to call, get a team.
He's calling players right now, actually.
Yeah. That's it.
Coach, we appreciate your time, as always, and thank you so much. We look forward to what's going to happen at Morehead State, and I know you do, too.
Yep. Thanks for having me, guys.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.